You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. A new book by Dr. Renee Owen, an associate professor in the School of Education at Southern Oregon University, sold out on Amazon almost immediately after it was published. It's titled Becoming a Transformative Leader from the Inside Out, A Guide for Educators. The book describes an educational model through which both leaders and their schools are transformed to more positively influence society. And it's getting rave reviews from educators nationwide. My guest is author and educator, Professor Renee Owen. Welcome to the Exchange.
Thank you, Mike Green. I'm happy to be here.
So you co-authored this book with Christine Mason. Tell me why you both decided to write this guidebook.
Oh, thanks for asking. Well, I teach a program called the Principal Administrative Licensure Program here at SOU in the School of Education. And I came to SOU because we have a Center for Holistic Education, and I'm a holistic educator. And I love being here. I came in 2020, and my job was to coordinate the administrative licensure program. So I teach educators, teachers who are getting their administrative license. They're becoming principals or other educational leaders. And I was assigning all sorts of different books and patching them together, chapters here and there, because nobody had written the book that I wanted for the program. So I wrote this book for my students. And where Christine Mason comes in is she's well published. She publishes almost a book a year. We met maybe 10, 15 years ago when we were receiving an award from an organization called Ashoka for being change leaders. So that was the attraction. And we kept saying we should write a book together. I really didn't have all that much time to do that while I was running schools. But now that I'm in higher ed and wanted to write a book for the program, I finally said, okay, Chris, let's do it.
Okay, you described yourself as a holistic educator. Tell me what that means.
It's funny because it's often hard to explain because some people call it a philosophy. And if I were to think of it as a philosophy, it's a philosophy that who you are as an educator is as important as the content of what you teach. And that education is so much about the humanness of relating to one another and to our environment. As a content, it's has to do with, some people call it mind, body, spirit, mind, body, soul, you know, that we are more than just, heads on a body, but that we have emotions and we communicate with one another and we have passions, and all of those things are important, the whole person.
Well, you're in education and every industry has its own terminology. And your book introduces us to a new acronym early on. It's called VUCA, V-U-C-A. Tell me about that.
Yes, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. It's a description for the world that we live in. And I don't consider it all that new to my world because it's a pretty common term in the organizational development world. And my doctorate degree is actually in organizational development. And the concept with VUCA is that our world just keeps getting exponentially more and more volatile, complex, and so on. And it used to be that when you ran a company or a school or an organization, there was a leader and a hierarchy, and that leader was the brains of it, and they knew everything that was needed to be known to run that organization. Well, in a volatile, uncertain, and complex and ambiguous world, that is not the case. So we have to completely reorganize our organizations and our schools and how we think so that knowledge and information and power are shared and networked rather than expecting the person at the top to be able to control everything. It's impossible.
Well, you know, in the business world, uncertainty is the worst. So people don't know how to plan, and what you're telling me is that uncertainty is normal.
It's absolutely normal, and so we have to be adaptable, and our schools are not designed to be adaptable. They're designed with a very rigid structure that is very problematic in a VUCA world.
Well, you write about a huge Gallup research project on what leaders need to be successful. compassion, stability, hope, and trust. Mm-hmm. Tell me about those.
I love that study. Gallup is very well renowned. I mean, they have, you know, probably all of us have participated in some Gallup study or read Gallup studies along the way. So, you know, for years and years and years, they've been collecting data on what makes a great leader, what followers want in a leader. And yes, compassion, stability, hope, and trust are the four main components of what followers supposedly want in a leader. And if you think about it, it sort of covers everything, and yet not, I don't know any leader who is all of that. So it's another example how leadership, the concept in this book is leadership is not an individual person anymore. It's a collective feature. So you might have a team that is compassionate and can create a stable environment, creates hope. So that's like a vision for the future, for instance, and trust. But it's pretty rare that one person is really all that.
So it seems like it's imperative that in this team, you have all of those positions filled.
Yes. So when I was a young leader, I founded a school, a charter school, when I was 30, 31, and very naive. And I immediately sought to hire people who were like me. Those were the people that I thought had the juice, that had what I wanted. And as I learned more, I made a lot of mistakes and learned through a lot of mistakes and learned more about leadership as well. I learned that I needed a well-rounded team and I needed people who were very different than me.
Well, you write that becoming a transformative leader is an inside-out job. How?
Well, the premise of the book, and this aligns with holistic education philosophy, right, is that if we're going to make change in anything, this particular context is education, but it could be applied to any field. It's really not a book just for educators. That's just the context, again, is if we're going to change anything, we first have to know how to transform ourselves and at least understand when and how we transform. And so we work on ourselves, and the chapters are organized that way. In part two of the book, we start with how to be reflective and how to understand ourselves better. And that might sound really simple, and it kind of is, and yet how much time do we really take in a VUCA world to do that? We do that in my program, the Principal Administrative Licensure Program. And we do it in the book, and then we move outward from there all the way out to, you know, how we help transform others, how we help transform schools and organizations, and what that effect has on society.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Dr. Renee Owen, an associate professor in the School of Education at SOU and co-author of Becoming a Transformative Leader from the Inside Out, a Guide for Educators. So the VUCA world is uncharted. You and your fellow educators are pioneering this new landscape. What should the mission of education be?
Thank you for asking that, because there is a whole little part in the book where I point out that the current mission of the United States Education Department is essentially to compete and to compete globally in the economy. That is not what I think the mission or the mission of education should be ultimately. I think the mission of education should be to live well and to thrive with who we are and what we have in the environment that we're in.
But we're in a VUCA environment run by a competitive capitalist society. How do we live well within that environment?
Well, that's sort of the challenge of leaders today is, so I'll use my program again. It's a double, there's two jobs to do when you run schools or organizations with my philosophy, which is comply and be highly skilled and effective in the systems that we have now in this world. And at the same time, be laying a foundation and creating the relationships and inspiring the sort of change and transformation to sort of move to a new system. And I think it might be in the book. One of my favorite quotes is by Buckminster Fuller, which is, you know, if you want to create a new system, don't, you know, attack or kill the old one. Just create a new one so the old one becomes obsolete.
Well, your first chapter is titled Becoming. And that immediately reminded me of the book by the former First Lady Michelle Obama, which had the same name. But what does that mean, becoming?
Well, it's intentionally this sort of verb that hangs there. And part of the point there is that we're never fully there. And, you know, early on in this interview, we talked about how there's this static system of the way our schools and organizations are set up, and we have to be adaptable and move and create systems that are constantly becoming, and so that we can adapt as things constantly change and are complex. Well, that applies to our very self as well. We're always becoming a leader. We never just arrive and are complete.
Well, you talk about becoming a self-actualized person. What does that mean?
Oh, it's, you know, psychologically, that's a theory by, you know, Abraham Maslow. But to become self-actualized is some people, you know, in mission statements, it's like to reach your highest potential is sort of the simplest way to say that. So what's the most and best that I can be? What's the most and best that you can be? But to me, it's not an individualistic thing. It's not just something that I do, because I might do it at the demise of someone else if I look at it this way. And I see it more as a collective effort.
Okay, so moving beyond the I to the we and seeing oneself as interconnected and then prioritizing the concerns of the we versus the I.
Yeah.
That's self-actualization.
That's my view of self-actualization. Yeah. I just can't see the world really any other way. And that's partly the transformation that I talk about in the book, is this transformation of worldview from this sort of individualized, and even schools that we're educating so that each individual can outcompete somebody else. Well, you know, but we're a community and we're a nation, and if we're all in this together and we are all connected, like it or not. And so that's where it becomes a collective matter.
I sure wish your class was filled with a lot of our elected leaders.
Me too.
Every child is born with different talents and attributes, as you know. Do you believe leaders are born or developed?
I believe leaders are developed. Now, there's no doubt that some people are born with some type of charisma, vision, that just sort of have some kind of spark that people naturally sort of gravitate to them like a magnet. And those people need as much training as those who need to really develop into leaders. Some of the finest leaders are introverts who really learn how to become leaders. And some of those people with natural charisma, well, they need to partner with the introverts.
Okay, so that's the whole part about recruiting a team.
Yeah, correct.
So talk about the leadership approach to relationships versus tasks.
Oh my gosh, that's an important philosophy, and not just a philosophy, it's a leadership theory, that leaders tend to be more task-oriented or more relationship-oriented. And you can tell by the way I'm speaking that I really believe that being relationship-oriented is important. It's one of my values. Well, when I was a young leader, I took a test. It was when I was getting my master's degree in administrative leadership. I gave it to people around me who worked for me and with me, and we all answered questions about my style of leadership and how I relate to them, and it came out that I was extremely task-oriented. I mean, I was really passionate about what I was doing, and so we all had work to do, And it was a shocker. It was a moment that I realized I had to transform and learn some new skills. So I intentionally learned a lot of social and emotional skills that I needed and learned to be more relational, learned to take that time and talk with someone who worked for me before getting down to just the task at hand, as an example.
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to have to be task-oriented. We're going to have to take a short break. I'll be right back with my guest, Dr. Renee Owen, co-author of Becoming a Transformative Leader from the Inside Out, a Guide for Educators. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Welcome back to the Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Dr. Renee Owen, an associate professor in the School of Education at Southern Oregon University. She co-authored the book, Becoming a Transformative Leader from the Inside Out, a Guide for Educators. Professor, how important is authenticity in leadership?
Well, my dissertation ended up being about authenticity, so I consider it extremely important, and I find that in the administrative licensure program that I teach at Southern Oregon University, that my students find it so important. Near the beginning of the program, we talk about authentic leadership. There's actually a theory out there called authentic leadership, and they learn to realize that they have this model in their head of what a leader or a school leader looks like and acts like, and they're trying to act like that. And we have to do a lot of shifting for me to help them realize, no, your people want you to be you. If you're you, they get to be them, and the kids get to be themselves, and everybody gets to self-actualize, to go back to that term. And it's such a revelation, and there's sort of this breath of fresh air in the room, and it helps us all be real with one another. And I want to add, this doesn't mean we lay our baggage out, you know, for everyone everywhere we go, but it does encourage us to truly be our best selves when we get to be our real selves.
Well, that sounds a little bit different than the form of assimilation that we've been taught.
Yeah, it is. Assimilation means you just sort of fit into the constructs that are there. And this is, in theory, what we might call accommodation, which is we learn something new and a new way of being. And that is often just discovering really what's deep inside us. So I do really believe in what they call, sometimes they talk about theory X or theory Y, which is I do believe that humans have a goodness deep inside them, and that's partly why authenticity is important. It's finding that and acting that.
Well, transforming an environment that has been sort of rigid, antiquated, if you will, that requires a lot of effort, and it needs a lot of support. So tell me about the need for support and mentoring within the construct of the education sector.
This is one of the things that have evolved in education that I think is really positive, that coaching and mentoring has become more of a norm in schools. There are so many positive things happening in our schools, and that's one of them. A lot of schools have coaches that help every single new teacher. And for leaders, I would like to see more of this, but there is some mentoring. Our local Southern Oregon Educational Service District offers administrative mentoring, for instance. I do a little bit of that as well. I mentor a new assistant principal right now, and it's such an immense support for them, partly because they can be honest with their mentor, especially since I'm external to their school. I'm not their boss. I'm not evaluating them. So it helps them be authentic. And we can just sort of move through problems of practice and help them often shift their frame. Often they see a solution as black and white. I can do this or that. So a lot of what mentoring is seeing, hey, maybe there's some other alternatives or there's another way to think about this.
How do you help superintendents? Recently we had a superintendent, a very well-beloved superintendent of Medford School District, left. There's a superintendent over in Rogue River. Looks like he'll be leaving as well. Mm-hmm. How do you help superintendents on the job when they're dealing with all the challenges of leading a school district and helping and supporting the teachers? And, of course, the teachers are helping and supporting the students. But you have a community that is, for lack of a better term, it's in a state of VUCA.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. I wish I had more of an answer for that. I mostly work with new leaders and helping them be fresh and all that they can be. And at that very, very senior level of superintendent, the first thing that comes to mind is I wish they had more of a community with one another and more possibility of being in a space that they can be honest and vulnerable. They're holding so much, and there's a reason that I don't remember the statistics, but it's less than 5 years is the typical tenure for a superintendent to stay in place. It's a burnout job, and so to be in a position that someone's expected to burn out, well, that doesn't exactly seem to be adaptable or a living system or a recipe for sustainability.
I like that you talk about systems, and I want to get into that in a moment. What is mindfulness?
Well, some people think of mindfulness as something that you do, you know, like some sort of meditation practice. And yes, it can be that. There are different practices. But the point of those practices is to develop one's system to be more mindful. And I say system because I don't just think of it as a cognitive thing or something you do with your brain. I think of it as something that's fully embodied. So when we're mindful, this is so important for leaders, we are able to, when someone's attacking us, which happens unfortunately all the time to leaders in our school systems, that we're able to maintain a sense of equanimity. We're able to still have compassion for the person that's attacking us. We're still able to see the higher needs and the common needs that we all have and rise above that. We're still able to access our higher levels of thinking, even in the midst of stress.
You have a section on the science and culture of belonging. I hear that term a lot. Tell me about it.
Yeah, I think it's becoming a little bit of one of those words that's thrown around, and sometimes I see signs or things that say, we all belong here, or you all belong. And you can't just put up a sign that says, we all belong. Belonging is something that we can deeply sense and feel when we really belong somewhere. And I'm so fascinated with neuroscience, and what neuroscience is teaching us is showing us is something that seems like common sense, which is that when we feel a sense of belonging, our nervous system is able to relax and our brain is really able to come online. That's when we're really able to learn. So that would mean that in our schools, people that work at schools, students who are there learning, really need a sense of belonging in order to learn. And that's why belonging is so incredibly important. How to create it is a lot more complex than people think. I grew up in a small little farm town in Minnesota where I just naturally felt like I belonged. And our schools largely used to be very homogenous. You know, my school was, and there wasn't much of a question. I didn't think of belonging because I naturally belonged. So if I got in trouble with a teacher, I wanted to come back into where I belonged. It's not like that for so many kids these days. They're lost at school, and they don't feel like they belong. Many, 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 many children. And so if they get punished, they're really not motivated to come back to belonging, which is confusing school systems these days. It's like punishment's supposed to teach them. If they didn't feel they really belonged in the first place, punishment is not teaching children these days. And we have big behaviors in schools these days. And we need a new way of working together.
My guest is Dr. Renee Owen. She's an associate professor in the School of Education at SLU and co-author of Becoming a Transformative Leader from the Inside Out, a Guide for Educators. So, Professor, you bring up a paradoxical situation. We talked earlier about the superintendents who don't really have a culture and community of belonging with one another, mm-hmm. and yet they are overseeing all of these environments where what you just talked about, students don't feel like they belong, teachers feeling like they don't belong, mm-hmm. and the community is in a state of VUCA, volatile, mm-hmm. uncertain, complex, ambiguity. How do we move forward? How do we transform that system to be what you envision?
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of different ways to do that, believe it or not, and a lot of them just begin with classrooms. You know, there are teachers that learn, for instance, some of these ways of creating a real sense of belonging in a classroom. Many, many, many teachers now begin school with a morning circle where every voice comes into the room. Students really share something about themselves that helps. They create a school family rather than just a classroom, and that alone is huge. That's just a single classroom. And what happens is when it works, other classrooms see that and they start doing the same thing all the way up to, we have a mandate now at the state of Oregon for social and emotional learning. That didn't come about because the state said, okay, everybody has to do social and emotional learning because we have all the science on it and it's a best practice and we know that. That started with some classroom teachers who knew that social and emotional learning were really important, and they created classrooms of belonging, and it worked. So more people did it, and then more schools did it, and then some superintendents said, oh, our whole district's going to do this, and then it went up to the state level after that had been studied, and it became a best practice. So I think that's a really great example of how this isn't really going to happen in a top-down manner. It happens just one leader at a time, one school at a time, and it bubbles up.
So it's bottom-up approach, start where you are. You mentioned early that you were a holistic educator. What does it mean to develop holistically? I know in your book mm-hmm. you had 7 rainbow domains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's from a school that I previously was executive director at. It was called Rainbow Community School. And I'll be honest, I was at a school that was one of the highest poverty schools and highest poverty districts in rural Colorado before that. And I really believed in tough love. And I was a very successful leader at this other school. And then I went to a Rainbow Community School and everything seemed really woo-woo. And I was kind of questioning it, even though I was the new executive director. And then I saw how it worked. And I saw these incredible teachers who had these beautiful classrooms where students had this sense of family. And so those teachers were educating children in all those domains is what they called them. So it's the physical domain. We see how kids develop physically, right? The mental domain, so that's academically and how we think, and cognitive development, as well as the social development, emotional development, how we relate to the natural world. Spiritual development was an aspect for that school, and creative development. And when you pay attention to all of those domains, all areas of the brain are lighting up rather than just pinging, you know, one particular rote, you know, skill over and over. And it means attending to how humans and children develop, not just achievement. So we turn things around with holistic development. We say that when we work on development, achievement comes naturally, as opposed to, unfortunately, what a lot of our schools are doing is they're just focused on achievement and development gets sort of squandered if we turn that backwards.
Okay, well, how do we move forward? You have a chapter on how to transform systems, shifting from an industrial paradigm mm-hmm. to living systems, which you mm-hmm. mentioned earlier. Now, that's quite a paradigm shift.
That is a huge paradigm shift. And that's, you know, whole new school systems obviously can't just happen one classroom at a time, right? But that's where leaders come in, and that's part of why I get so excited about working with leaders is as we become leaders. So again, I teach the administrative licensure program at SOU. I'm working with teachers who are becoming leaders. And as they realize that their sphere of control and power are getting bigger, guess what? They are actually able to create new systems, maybe just within their school. And so these living systems, and it's a whole sort of paradigm. I've actually been able to train even one of our local schools, the Valley School, using this living system. Sometimes it's called self-organizing management. There's different names for it. And it worked brilliantly, and they are still using it years later. And you walk in there to a faculty meeting, and you've never seen a faculty meeting like that anywhere else. Everybody's really co-creating and making decisions together, so it's a lot more efficient because everybody believes in the decisions that they make and they implement them rather than the quiet resistance that happens when you don't have those types of systems.
Okay. This is so much, and I have so much more to try and squeeze into this conversation. But unfortunately, we're out of time. We have about 30 seconds, so I'll ask you this. Why is a systems mindset needed for transformative change?
So we can become better. So we can become everything we're meant to become. So we can become whole.
Okay. And how do you hope people will use this book?
Somewhat, I hope they can use it to heal. A lot of us feel a lot of damage from the systems that are out there, and holistic systems can help us actually heal. Heal and whole have the same root word.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. That's all the time we have. Thank you so much, Professor.
Thank you.
My guest was Renee Lee Owen, co-author of Becoming a Transformative Leader from the Inside Out, a Guide for Educators. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio.